Okay, I would like to take the next few minutes to try to elaborate, understand a line, an idea about Chanukah within the context of the recent parshios that we are addressing, this week's parsha's Miketz. So I want to really try to bring up a few ha'aras about the brothers, if I can. I want to understand some of the behaviors and the actions that Reuven does, that Yehuda is doing, and the brothers in general, as well as Yosef. Everyone really requires explanation. And hopefully through watching what they do, we can understand ourselves also how one should be acting in this world. The first thing, which is a question that many people ask, why was Reuven the one to care most about Yosef's well-being? Why did Reuven want to save Yosef more than anybody else wanted to save Yosef? Reuven was a brother like all the other brothers. He was threatened from Yosef like every other brother would be threatened. And yet, when they all came, push came to shove, and they were going to kill Yosef, Reuven Davka seems to want to rise to the occasion. Now, Rashi there quotes a pshat, and again, it's in last week's Parsha. Rashi quotes a pshat and says, Reuven was the Bechor. As the oldest, so when things go wrong, you're looked at as being the one who's responsible for that. Okay, it's definitely a pshat. But I would like to share with you a pshat brought down in the name of the Chafetz Chaim about Reuven and his connection to Yosef. I spoke about this a little bit earlier on today, but I'll say it to you again right now just to appreciate this in context. The brothers hated Yosef. But why did they hate him so much? It's not some regular sibling rivalry. The brothers were big tzaddikim. And these big tzaddikim tried killing their brother. Well, they thought about doing it at least. And then they even sold him away to Egypt. They eventually got to Egypt in the end. How could tzaddikim like that, and if you ever paid attention to the stories that we have during the kinos, or on Yom Kippur, kinos and Tisha B'Av on Yom Kippur, so we mentioned that one of the kings did what's called, he had the 10 martyrs be executed in these terrible fashions. And what was the right? What right did he feel he had to do that? Because years ago, generations ago, there were 10 people who acted in a terrible fashion towards their brother, towards Yosef. Binyamin was not there for the selling. 10 people acted in a terrible fashion. If they were here right now, I would execute them, but they're not. But since you're here, you'll take their place. Which means the brothers did something that was terrible. What gave them the quote-unquote right, or the hava mina, that behaving in that fashion towards Yosef was permissible? I don't care how much he was annoying them by all of his dreams. So many people bring down the following chiddush. Yosef was a rodef, they say. What does rodef mean? Chaser. What does it mean in this context, though? What does a rodef halakhli speak? What's a rodef halakhli? Okay, that is a phrase. What's that phrase used?
You have to go. If someone's trying to kill you.
Excellent. Regular Eliezer Heller. If a person is running after someone to kill them, they get the status called a rodef. And the rule is, if someone's a rodef, you're allowed to, if you can't stop it, you can kill them even to stop this chase going on. Good, excellent. Now again, they're allowed to chase you in that case. Why? Why go to the Ir Mikla?
Because you killed someone.
You killed someone by accident, right? By accident after. Yeah. There's something called Goel Hadam. The vengeful one, the redeemer of blood. The relative of the person that you killed by accident is allowed to try to kill you. And you're allowed to get to the Ir Mikla if you can get there and be spared. So therefore, you know, he's running after you for a halakhically allowed reason. You're running away from him for obvious reasons as well. The brothers judged Yosef to be a rodef. Why was he a rodef? Because up until this point in history, there was always one brother who made it out. The other brothers were left aside. If you look in the history we had Avram gave birth to 2 sons. He had Ishmael and he had Yitzhak. And only one of them made it out, Yitzhak. Meaning became the main inheritor of Avram. And Yitzhak had 2 sons. He had Yaakov and Esav. And only one of them made it out, Yaakov. And all of a sudden now Yosef is one of 12 siblings. He's one of 12. And he's kind of like jockeying for position to be the next one. He gets the special coat. He's Rachel's son. He's ratting out the brothers. He's playing the game that all the other brothers up before them had seen, all the other family siblings had seen up till now. He's playing the game of favorite sibling. And that what they thought was going to knock them out of position to become the Shvatim. And they knew it was wrong. There was supposed to be 12 of them. And they figured there's two choices. There's going to be one of us or 11 of us. We're not all 12 going to make it because Yosef is playing this, he's kind of pulling us apart. He's a rodef. He's threatening Jewish future. We must get rid of him. And that's how they judged him. Using their halachic know-how, they judged him in that fashion. But Reuven felt differently. Why? Because he was makir tov to Yosef. He was makir tov. What that means is that he had a level of appreciation for Yosef and his dreams. And I mentioned earlier on in the shiur and Pirkei Avos part why he had that appreciation. Because when Yosef had his dream, he saw 11 stars or 11 things of wheat bowing to him. Or 11 stars bowing to him. And while all the other brothers are saying, excuse me, who do you think you are? Reuven said, oh, I wish I was part of that group. Because Reuven had just now committed a crime against his father. As he mentioned earlier on today, he moved around the bed of Yaakov from Bilhah's tent to Leah's tent. A very serious offense, one that the Torah describes as like sleeping with Bilhah herself. That's how bad it was. And he figured there's a good chance right now that he lost a spot. And when Yosef goes along and says, there's 11 stars bowing to me, if you do the math, one of them is Reuven. And he's makir tov for Yosef's dream. So Chafetz Chaim asks, what, that gives him the right now to not judge him properly? So what, he's allowed to be biased now in the judgment? The answer is no. He was being real in the judgment. But the moment that he had a karas tov, he could see Yosef in a different light than the rest of the brothers saw him. When you go into a situation and you see a certain perspective, it's very natural to see it your way and your way only. It's very natural and easy to do that. What Reuven was able to do is see things outside of his own dalet amos. He was able to see them beyond that. Because he experienced an appreciation of what Yosef's dream was, and that allowed him not to show extra love to Yosef, but to have a different angle of what Yosef's dream was. He did not believe he was a rodef. He was not worthy of being killed. He was someone who was having a prophecy that included him in the picture, and that gave him an appreciation of where Yosef was coming from. Step number one I want to take from this parsha, this appreciation of Reuven, is that Reuven was able to see things differently, and that made every other brother not get the picture Reuven was presenting. Limashal, we all go into a experience of coming for a year in Israel. Not we all. Everyone in this room certainly came into that experience. What's most of our goals coming in? I don't know, to have a great time with the boys, learn a little more, hopefully connect to davening a little more. We have reasons. But our goal is certainly not to have necessarily a life-changing experience. For many of us, that's not my goal, to change my college choice, change my next year's choice, to change my religious practices so much. I don't want to stop doing what I'm doing already. I don't want to stop eating the restaurants where I eat, or hang out with the girls I hang out with, or do whatever I do with my girlfriend. I'm not interested in changing those things around. I want to have a nice experience, get more committed, but I can. And therefore, when someone will give you a schmooze or a life-changing opportunity, who does he think he is? That rabbi, who does he think he is to tell me that line as he knows? And we dismiss. We throw out the opinion, the position, that person. Not interested in hearing about that at all. But once in a while, you have a person who has his mind, for some reason, opened up to different thoughts. Whatever reason it is. He came in a certain way. And you know what? He's open-minded. You think we're closed-minded. We think you're closed-minded. You come in with a very, very specific goal in mind. Anything outside of these boundaries. And maybe you have, this is where you came from, so I'll give you this much. I'll open my eyes a little bit. But beyond that, no thank you. And if someone gives you a one-liner or a schmooze or a point, we're very quick to dismiss it. That would mean that I have to change around this or that. Who does he think he is? He knows me. He's a dinosaur. He doesn't understand what's going on in the world right now. And we dismiss. But once in a while, you have a guy like a Reuven, where his eyes are opened up to a little more open-mindedness than what his peers are doing. And he can see things in the comment that was made that are different than what everyone else is seeing. And that's what you learn from Reuven over here, that he had his ability to see things because he understood that it's not the way they're looking at it. They see things with blinders on. I'm exposed to roots. So Yosef's dream being a wish that I have. I hope it's true. And therefore, the opportunity presents itself for me to be able to be changed by what Yosef over here is suggesting, is he's saying, because I believe in what he's saying to be true, and that gives me the chance to look at him differently. That's one point I would like to raise for you and suggest to you. I recently gave a schmooze in one of the high schools in New York, New Jersey area. And I said something over there. I said, I gave everyone the note that I always give. And people came in hearing something about Torah Shraga and about my presentation before I got there even. And they felt that it was presented in a very specific way that they were not excited about hearing. Now, little do they know, I taped it before I gave it. Because I assumed that this certain school would look at it in a certain fashion for a reason I don't want to get into right now. I taped the entire thing before I never did it in my life beforehand, and I only did this one place, the same place over here where I spoke. I taped the whole thing. And when I got feedback about what people saw about it, I said, listen to the tape yourself. And every person who listened to it said, that's not what I heard about it. And the reason why is when someone presents or speaks about the issue in a certain way, and you come in thinking certain things, you will always see it that way. That's how you're going to see it. Two people go to the same event and see things differently. And a good proof of this is using the world of sports. You have two coaches who watch the same play. And one of them claims it's a foul on my guy got fouled. The guy says it was not a foul at all. How come it's not an objective thing? It's subjective. You're always going to see what you want to see. You're always going to hear what you want to hear. It's rarely that you are going objectively because you always have a level of bias. The question is, what's your bias? You come into a yeshiva experience. What's your bias? I'm biased. I don't want to change around my life right now. Or I'm biased that I want to find the best way to serve God. What's my bias? So for most of us, it's the first. I want to find the way that I cannot change around my life too much. I'm ready to go into X college. That's not going to change. I have X plan for my career. That's not going to change. And anything that gets in that way, I throw out as being, that's an opinion. It's not my opinion. He's wrong. What does he know? But imagine the other bias that you would have. But you had a bias that says, I want to just absorb and connect to God. That's my bias. I don't want anything that's going to get in the way of that. And we'd have the same conversation with two different people. One of them will be like, lapping it up. Please tell me more. Please share with me more. I mentioned, and I'll share with you now the story, and then I'll just have one small point afterwards, and I'll end with that. There was a Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who was a Rebbe of mine before he passed away. He was in the Gris Kollel. He was a Rosh Shiva of Gush. So he's my Rebbe for 2 years in the Gris Kollel. So I heard one time Rabbi David, I think, told the following story. Rabbi David was in his shir. Rabbi Shiva was in his shir in YU. And there was one time Rabbi Lichtenstein was a man of the world. He was a Rav Soloveitchik's son-in-law. He was a man of the world. Very well read in every area you could imagine. And he also was a person who believed in not only religious values, but worldly values. I don't remember if it was Darfur or what it was, but there was something that was Darfur-like, where people in a certain country were being persecuted. And he took his shir from YU for whatever it was to go and march with the rest of the world. Wherever they were marching, in the city, near some consulate. I don't know what they were doing exactly. Now, the Rosh Hashiva of YU at the time, besides he was also Rosh Hashiva, were like European, older European. They did not appreciate his gesture. Now, I don't know if I knew what he was doing for real, but they didn't appreciate his gesture. I think Rabbi David was there at the time, and they pulled him aside. Pulled him aside and they screamed at him, what do you think you're doing? How dare you take out time from the yeshiva experience for this? And they described what they thought it was that he was going to. And it wasn't what they thought it was. But Lichtenstein listened for like 5 minutes as they berated him in front of his own Talmud. And when they left, his Talmud, I think it was Rabbi David, again, I don't know if he told the story, but I don't remember if it was him or not, I think it was Rabbi David, said, Rebbe, I don't understand. Why don't you correct them? Explain to them what they were wrong. And he said, are you kidding me? Missed the opportunity to hear Musser from two Gedolim? I should stop them. It's a schus. Why is it a schus to do that? Because what's Rabbi Lichtenstein's goal? I want to be better. I want to be a better version of myself. I don't care if they're wrong what they're saying, but I can get out of this right now. If my goal is I shouldn't be embarrassed, I shouldn't be ridiculed, I shouldn't change myself around, then I'll quickly correct them for what they're mistaking me about. It's not my goal. I want to be a better version of myself, and this muster that I'm getting might help me out. It's misplaced muster. So what? If that's my goal, of course I'll get out of it. And just to bring home one more point based on that idea, towards the end of the parsha, this point I'll end, there's a discussion brought down where Yosef has told the brothers that if they don't bring Binyamin back, then they're not welcome to get any more food. They can't get any more food. And when Yosef, when the brothers come back and they tell Yaakov, their father, he's very upset with them. He says, how could you ask that of me? I've already gone through so much of my life, I'm not going to give you Binyamin also. It's an impossibility. But as the food runs out, as the food's running out, so once again, the brothers approach their father, Yaakov. First, Reuben comes even before that happens. And he says, Dad, I promise you I will take care of Binyamin. What does he say? He says to them, he says, if I don't do my job, then my two sons should die. So what is Yaakov's response? What's Yaakov's response? But your sons aren't my grandkids? I want my grandkids to die? And the Rashi says over here is, B'chor Shota. What a foolish suggestion that your sons should die. It's ridiculous. And he dismisses it entirely and he ignores Reuven's plea. A little time passes. And once again, the famine gets worse. And now Yehuda goes and says the following words. Anochi eravenu miadid tivakshenu. I guarantee it. If I do not do my job properly, then I will have sinned against you all the days. Does Rashi, what does all days mean? It means Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba also, I'm out. Olam Haba, I'm out also. What do you expect Yaakov to say similarly? You think I want you to be out, Olam Haba? What, so now, in the end of the day, so Binyamin's going to be gone, and you lose Olam Haba, why do I want that? But instead, what does Yaakov say? Deal. Why? Why is he okay potentially with Yehuda losing Olam Haba? It's the most important thing in life, Olam Haba. He's okay to lose it? Isn't Yehuda his son also? Does he care about Yehuda? So the Sam Derech of Simchas Yisrael Broid and brings down the following Kiddush, and this is a point I think I want to leave you with today. He says that Yehuda is saying is, I guarantee, give you my word, my guarantee. When I say to you, my sons will be taken if things go wrong, if something's out of my hand, if it's an ason, if it's an accident, so then I could, we could discuss why it shouldn't count. But you know what a guarantor is? A guarantor kicks in when you can't pay money. I say, I'll guarantee Ira's loan. And something happens to Ira, that's an accident. And he can't pay his money anymore. They go to the guarantor. I'm on the hook for it. I have no choice. A guarantor means no matter what happens, this one's on me. I have no excuses. I can't argue why it's different. I have nothing to say. When you take that level of achrayus in yourself that I will not present anything whatsoever, whatever happens, it's on me, at that point in time, you know what? If you're level to commit that way, then I trust you. Reuven was saying over here, my kids, so maybe at the end of the day, you can argue that it was an accident, didn't mean to do it, and the kid should be spared. But the word, anochi eravenu, I am the guarantor, means that I accept any flaws is on me. We are so quick to point our finger, oh, I don't know this morning, I didn't go this morning because the madrich didn't wake me up. What are you blaming someone else for? I go to someone who's in the basement manager's on their phone. What are you doing here? My chavrus is not here yet. So? My kesher. If your business partner wasn't in the morning and when the stocks were being exchanged, you wouldn't trade any stocks because he's not here yet? Of course you would. It's too small for me to read the Mara Makomos. Would you read the Mara Makomos if it was an instruction manual of how to be better in life in some business area? Of course you read it. Stop making excuses about things. Anochi eravenu means man up. If something is your fault, then you say, you know what? My bad. Because you know why? Because I want to be the best I could possibly be. Don't blame someone else for your flaws. You know who did that in the very beginning of time? Adam did it. Chava did it. They all did it. Chava, they said to Chava, what'd you eat? She gave it to me. Why'd you eat? Well, the Nachash told me to do it. They'll never become better when you pass blame as to why you didn't step up to the plate. The key in life is to be better. You should embrace people reaching out and challenging you. And when something goes wrong, don't pass the buck. Even if there's a good reason why. Oh, he was bothering me. He was distracting me. He was talking to me. So what? What's it do with you? You man up. If your goal in life is to become better, then you come in this year over here to try to be better, then then everything is awaiting you. Opportunities are abound. If your goal is to be limited in your growth, is to have a great time, pictures like a post on Snapchat, and some fun memories, and a WhatsApp group will always stay in touch with each other from now on. So congratulations, you will have a very limited, successful year. You get all the things you want, but that's about it. The moment you're holding on to what you know before you came in here, you're holding on to, you're closed-minded to developing beyond what you've imagined originally. You're closed-minded, not us. You're closed-minded. We've already gone through the process and opened our mind to possible changes. You are the ones not doing it. And when someone critiques you, you make an excuse and a blame. Oh, it's my madrich to wake me up. The source is too hard for me. I don't want to get into that. There will never be development. Reuven and Yehuda, in different lights, taught us what it means to be growth-minded. I'll give you the bracha. As we spend the next 4 days away from yeshiva, know what it means to be growth-minded. To spend these 4 days, and if it's your vacation that you have in senior year, spring break, and chill with the boys, and that's your version of a vacation, means you just don't get it. You don't get it. It's like you're in high school all over again. You have not opened yourself up to what it means to be developing. And if you do it that way, then, you know, throw my hands in the air. I don't have to tell you anymore. You're closed-minded. Not me. You are closed-minded. Say to yourself, you know what? I have 4 days now to be in Hanukkah, which is the festival of lights, to be lit up, not lit up that way, to be lit up and inspirationally. And I have the opportunity right now to do that. Where can I go that will help me with that? Who could I surround myself right now with to help me with that? If that's your behavior and your attitude, then we are looking forward to a fantastic number of months together. But otherwise, it's going to be me talking to a guy who cannot understand what it means to be working on himself to the highest way possible. Chanukah, this parsha, should bless you with the opportunity to be open-minded to development and always look for opportunities to be a better person. Have a great Shabbos.